Hi, hello, and how are you, everybody? This is one of my favorite times of the year, Beth, and I'll tell you why. Because it's the start. This is the official start of summer. The days are longer. I know you don't like that as much. How are you? Are you in Louisiana? What are you, in Louisiana now, today?
I literally just got into Louisiana just a few minutes ago. So, yeah, I'm hunkered down at the hotel, ready to work this week, and Huma. I'm here, ready for a good week.
All right.
It's hot.
And it's hot here too in California. It's we're hitting a little bit of a heat wave, triple digits. So I'd like to be a little cooler, but you know I've lived in Arizona and Louisiana, so I'm pretty fortunate that this is about as bad as it gets here. So we'll see. No big deal. So if people want to call, they can. Call in number 347-324-5246. Remember, you can send us an email, goingjimfree@gmail.com. Don't forget, you can like us on Facebook. Also, follow us on Twitter at ALR Radio and at goingjimfree. Also, you can download our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. I have a good program today, Beth. We're going to talk about smoking cessation, kicking the habit. So a lot of people face this battle. I know you deal with it with a lot of your clients. So we have a good interview coming up. I'm looking forward to it.
I know. I can't wait to hear what she has to say. And hopefully I can pick up a few tips from her with my clients as well. So she sounds like she's an amazing woman, and we're so blessed that she actually carved out some time to talk with us. So.
Oh, no doubt. Also, the other topic today is this is post Father's Day. So we both shared some stories after Mother's Day. So I thought we could kind of loosen it up, lighten it up, and talk about our dads. Your dad is of course still with us. My dad passed in 2007, but I still think about him. I still think about him in a very funny way. He was a funny guy. Do you want to tell a story first, or should I kick this off? You let me know what you want to do.
Well, you kick it off, because I have two stories that I want to tell about my dad. So why don't you kick it off? You're the host, and we can go from there.
Okay, so when I was 14, and I was playing baseball. I was in a baseball league and out here in California. And my parents, it's not like today where the parents show up to every event, all in the practices. So they didn't come to every game. They were busy working, but they came to quite a few. So anyway, there was a time, 14 years old, and I had just hit what I thought was a double into the left field corner. I got to second base, and a friend of mine who was at second faked like he was putting a tag on me. The umpire didn't see the fake tag, but when he turned around, he picked it up, called me out. I was clearly safe. I was called out, and as I was running off the field, I took my helmet and threw it all the way against the dugout, said a swear word that we can't use on the radio. I said a swear word real loud, and the umpire threw me out of the game. I was 14 years old, throws me out of the game at age 14. My mom and my dad are standing along the fence line, and mortified.
Mortified that you did that, or mortified that your son got kicked out, or mortified the whole situation?
Check all those boxes. Yeah, all of them.
So, what's going on here?
Yeah. All of them. I get kicked out of the game, thrown out, and I remember getting in the car. Actually, the field was close enough to where I could walk home, so I walked home, and they drove home. And I remember getting home, and they weren't as mad as I thought they were going to be. But the takeaway from this was, you know, I hope you learn from this. As you get older, you know, this was a disappointing moment for us as parents, because there were friends of ours that were there that were other parents. But I remember them reacting in a way where it was, all right, we want to make sure that you never forget this, and you'll learn how to behave yourself when you're in this kind of situation. And doing something like that not only embarrassed people that care about you, but yourself as well, and you look like an idiot. And I'll tell you, that was one of the take. I still tell that story a lot. And I tell that to, as an umpire, I tell that to different parents and kids. And I say that, I said, don't do this in front of your parents because it's a miserable experience. I look back now on it and it's funny, but it really taught me how to be more humble, thoughtful, think things out a little bit. So that was one, that was probably a good, thankfully that didn't happen on Father's Day. I can't imagine what that would have been like, but that was one where I learned the lesson, and but I was glad that they didn't yell at me or punish me or anything like that. It was more like, look, this is how you have to learn how to deal with this, and you're the one that's got to be kind of embarrassed. So at the time, funny. I mean, at the time, miserable. Now looking back, kind of funny. But that was a good takeaway. That was kind of a parent, a dad, son moment.
Yeah, and you so don't have a temper. So when you said that story, I'm like, Mark Prescott throwing his helmet? Because I've known you for so long, and I've never seen you, you know, blow your gasket before, throw a helmet, any
right.
of those. So good story.
Yep.
Yay for dad. Yay for
dad. Yeah, and your dad? Your dad's still around, though.
My dad is amazing. I have, like, the best dad in the world. I actually have a funny one, and then I have a sweet one. But the funny one, I was probably, like, 5, and I wanted a bra. I thought I was old enough. Clearly, at 5, I was old enough to have a bra, but
sure.
I wanted one so badly. And I high-strung kid, and whatever. So he went out and bought me like a little T-shirt and told me it was a bra. So I'll never forget that. It was pink and it was cute, and I was so excited that I had a bra at 5. I felt so adult. And looking back on it, he was probably, oh good Lord. But And another one, when I graduated from college, I worked at a YMCA, made pennies. I mean, my salary was not anything to live off of, and I was really struggling financially. So I had a dog and 2 cats, and I was just struggling, and my dad surprised me on a Saturday night, drove 2.5 hours with like a carload of groceries and toiletries and kitty litter and dog food, and literally was just like, here you go. And here's $50. And it was a shock. I'm surprised. I'm glad it was home, actually. And
uh-huh.
It was just a really thoughtful gesture. I think he stayed like 15, 20 minutes. He's like, I've got to get back home. So he knew that I had worked my way through school and put myself through school. And I think that was his way of being like, hey, listen, I know you're trying hard. And, you know, these are the times that you'll remember and you're going to grow. And those are two really, really good memories about my dad. So, yeah, for dad.
And how, yeah, your dad, yeah, I've never met your dad, but you always speak highly of him. I'm sure he's a great guy. And how long did you strut around as a 5-year-old in that shirt telling people that you were just wearing your bra?
I don't remember. Oh, my gosh. I think once I got it, like, I was excited. I don't remember seeing past that, but I just remember my dad brought it home, and he was like, here you go, yay, and
I bet that your dad has a Polaroid, because we're both old and we remember Polaroid cameras.
I'm not old, buddy.
I bet your dad, your mom and dad have a picture somewhere with you in that shirt on that says Beth and her, and then it's like an air quote, you know, the little quote, Beth and her bra, and her first bra. That's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny now. Yeah, no, I had a great relationship with my dad, and I think about him a lot, and he kind of ties into what we're talking about today. He actually passed from lung cancer about 10 years ago, and so this is a pretty important show. It's still a big problem, tobacco, and trying to get people to kick the habit. So this is something that I know it's kind of up your alley too, because you know you live in Texas, and more people smoke in Texas, I think, than in California. So this is going to be something good for you too.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I know you don't smoke, so I didn't want to sound like I think you're a smoker, because I know you don't smoke. So.
Well, it's not so much
that,
but I think anything with my job, I think anything that I can learn from a professional, whether the habits be, you know, sugar or, you know, eating emotionally or tobacco or whatever. I can always learn from the best. And, I mean, MD Anderson. I mean, we all know, everybody knows MD Anderson. So I'm really excited again. I said it before and I'll say it again. I'm really excited that we have one of the leading groups behind us in this effort and willing to take the time and chat with us. So.
Yeah, that's good. So without anything further, let's go ahead and bring on Diana right now. And thanks for sticking with us here on a Wednesday night as we are officially into summer now. You're listening to AtlantaLifeRadio.com. If you want to send us an email, go ahead. Feel free at goingjimfree@gmail.com. Don't forget to like us on Facebook. Also, you can check us out on Twitter at ALR Radio. You can also follow me on Twitter at Going Gym Free. Remember, you can always download the podcast. I think we've turned this into a pretty good hit on iTunes and Stitcher, so we're doing pretty well here. Let's go ahead and bring in our guest this week, Diane Beneventi. She's with the MD Anderson Cancer Center. She's a psychologist with a tobacco treatment program. Boy, Diane, that's a mouthful for me. I'm surprised I got through that. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
I'm good. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Oh, so tell us a little bit about your role, what you're doing now, your background. Just kind of give us a little bit of the 411 on what you're doing now.
Well, for the past 5 years, I was initially hired to supervise the counselors in the tobacco treatment program. And my role has expanded a little bit recently where I'm also supervising the support staff. So I sort of watch the operations of the tobacco treatment program and try to make sure, you know, our outreach and also our clinical services are provided in an efficient manner and just kind of keep things rolling around here.
You know, we're going to get back into some serious stuff here, but Mark and I, in the intro of the show tonight, we shared Father's Day stories. So before we get back into the tobacco cessation, I wanted to know, would you be willing to share a nice or funny or sweet or good story about your dad for Father's Day, which was this past weekend?
Sure. My dad passed away actually on Father's Day, which is sad, a couple of years ago, but he was a very special and important person in my life all my life, and you know, what just comes to mind is a story about smoking, since we're talking about smoking cessation. I remember, I don't know how young I was, but I was old enough to be in school, but I would suspect maybe first or second grade, very young. And my dad did smoke. I only knew this because he had cigarettes in his suit pocket. And I don't have a memory of him smoking in the home or witnessing it. And I've only recently heard my mom used to smoke one on occasion, too. But I learned in school, I think, that it was really bad, and that distressed me greatly. And so I started taking his cigarettes out of his pocket, and I was throwing them behind this huge cabinet we had full of books. And
wow.
They were just, I know, and I didn't say anything to anybody, apparently. And then finally, they figured out what was happening, and they spoke to me about it, and they said, you know, it's wrong to steal, and, you know, you shouldn't be taking your father's cigarettes. And I explained that, you know, I don't want you to smoke because I know it's really bad for you. And I don't know exactly what I said, but I said something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, okay, we understand, you know, but don't do that anymore. So I said, okay. So I thought about it, and apparently what I did after that was I took them all out, and I cut them in half with scissors and shoved them back in there.
Oh, that's funny.
So I destroyed them and put them back in his suit pocket.
That is so funny.
And you know what? He quit. I mean, he didn't smoke after that. I think he was one of those people that didn't smoke frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they just decided, you know, I was a very determined on that. So that's the story that comes to my mind.
Oh, well, thank you for sharing that. Wow, that's a powerful story.
That's a good story, and sorry to hear about that with your dad. My dad passed in 07 as a result of complications with lung cancer, which stemmed back to, of course, him being a heavy smoker way back when he was younger. And so this topic definitely hits home for me, too. So thanks for sharing that story. That was a good story.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I wanted to know, because you lived in California, I live in California, And I wanted to get kind of your take on this because it seems to me when I just kind of do the eye test and check it out, it doesn't seem like as many people, at least in California, are smoking. So, you know, where do you think we are, Diane, when it comes to smoking? Is it still growing? I know there's the issue that cigarettes are expensive, but is that deterring people? Are you seeing it where you are? Is it on the rise? Where are we at with it?
Well, cigarettes being more expensive is definitely a deterrent. They have a lot of data on that when they raise the price or the taxes, that smoking goes down, and also public campaigns against smoking are effective as well. And generally, we are going down. I mean, as a nation, we are decreasing our cigarette smoking substantially. The most recent data out shows us that about 14.9% of adults as smoking, and that's down. I think the last survey was in 2014. We were at about 17% or 16.8%,
oh, wow,
really. But yeah,
that's,
so it's,
that's good.
It's down.
That's good.
Mm-hmm, quite a bit. And way down, you know, from, like, say, 1997, we're down about almost 25%. So it's going down. It's staying steady in some populations where we're not seeing the same reductions. Let's say in the mentally ill population, it hasn't reduced as much. So, but generally, overall, we are doing better.
Do you see more people like in the South, like Texas, as opposed to like California? And I'm just using those two states where we're at. But do you see more people in the South smoking? Is it like demographically? Do you know that?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. The, you know, the states where they grow tobacco and there's a big tobacco industry, there is definitely more smoking. And as you said, in the South. In the Northwest, it tends to be less. I think Virginia has the highest smoking rates, and it's upwards in the high 20% or so, not quite 30% of people. And Kentucky, they're heavy smokers in Kentucky also. But the range is great. It's from about, it's like 9% in Utah to almost 30% in some states. So Texas is really not too bad, I think. I don't want to say exactly because I'm not exactly certain, but I think we're below 15%, I think, or around there. So we're doing about, you know, the average amount, but many states are doing much better. And California and Utah and Colorado tend to be really good. And you know, just definitely there have been some states who've taken the lead, I think, in policy and in their public campaigns and things like that. And also resources, you know, what resources are made available to people makes a difference.
Right. You know, I think most people know the basic hazards of tobacco use, you know, cigarettes and, you know, dip and all that. But for our listeners out there, can you recap some of the health problems associated with smoking and tobacco use? And what are some of the reasons people give for wanting to quit?
Those are two big questions. Well, the you know, what's interesting, since coming to work here, honestly, I've learned so much more specifically what smoking does. And I found it eye-opening. And I feel like the average person might not really know. They know it's bad for coronary artery disease, but I don't know if they know the different things that happen. Like, we all know that it constricts the blood vessels, right? Because nicotine has a vasoconstricting effect. So we know that's not good for circulation. But then there are things not related to nicotine, just related to smoking. And by the way, the vasoconstriction effect is fairly small. I think that's the thing most people know about is nicotine, and they think it's the bad actor in the cigarettes, but it really isn't. There's the other ingredients in cigarettes, or just burning tobacco itself and inhaling it, is carcinogenic. So these days they're trying to sell, you know, organic cigarettes and all this. They're trying to market things to make people think they're safe, that maybe they don't contain cancer-causing agents. But smoking tobacco, inhaling it, there are carcinogens associated with that, even when there aren't additives. But as far as heart disease goes, there isn't just that constriction effect. It also increases atherosclerosis, which causes, you know, the arteries to be blocked, and it causes you to clot easier because the platelets become much stickier. And then the third thing that's kind of interesting, there's a protective layer inside your arteries that helps, you know, the blood move through smoothly, And smoking, the carbon monoxide from smoking actually causes that layer to break down more easily. And if that happens, that's when you may have a stroke, because that layer will be broken and then, you know, blood vessels will come to clot and heal it. And that's when a vessel can be completely blocked. So there's a lot of things that smoking does that hurt your heart and your circulatory mm-hmm. system. The most commonly known things are that, you know, smoking has an effect on your pulmonary function, like
right.
emphysema, COPD, and then, of course, lung cancer. People do know about that. But it also has some really broad range effects on your overall health. It affects diabetes. People who quit actually can – they're healthier. They don't need as much – I don't want to say specifically because I'm not a physician. I'm a psychologist, but I know it does affect the way you metabolize sugar and things like that. So it affects diabetes. It also has effects on mental health. There are some recent studies that show smoking in and of itself can make people – feel more depressed. So many people think that it's good for, you know, people who have mental health problems to smoke, that they do it, and they may do it for some relief, but overall it is not a positive for mental health to smoke.
Wow, I never heard that before. That's really interesting.
Yeah, we are, if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Diane Beneventi with the MD Anderson Cancer Center. She's a psychologist and works in the tobacco treatment program. All right, Diane, I'm going to put you on the spot here. This is probably a question you get all the time. Being a psychologist and dealing with tobacco cessation, the best way, okay, so about here, I've seen different things in California. You know, we're the liberal state. We do things, you know, whatever. We're not quite like Colorado. We're not letting everybody smoke pot and all that. Not yet, at least. But the most effective ways to quit. So out here, you know, sometimes you go to a rally. They'll have cold turkey sandwiches. They'll have groups that are trying to get people to kick the habit. Some people, you know, nicotine gum, cold turkey sandwiches. I'm just going to stop because I want to see my kids grow up. But is it okay if I still have a cigarette when I go out and have a drink? To which, when people have asked me that, I say no. But again, I'm not a psychologist. What, in your opinion, and I guess it just depends on the individual. Do you have advice for people that, you know, what are the most effective ways? I know there's no magic pill or bullet, but what do you think about the effective ways to quit, to kick the habit?
Well, there are a lot of ways, and we do individualized treatment here at MD Anderson, but there are some basic things to know if people would like to quit. First of all, as you said, there's a lot of different reasons for wanting to quit. A lot of them are health-related, but a lot of powerful motivation is to be available for family, kids, taking care of people. They just want to live longer. And another growing awareness is it's not just how long you live, it's the quality of your life. You know, so you don't want to be having the last phase of your life be really impaired, you know, for example, needing oxygen or not being able to do physical things. So those are the main reasons for wanting to quit. And then the most effective, what we do know from research is the most effective way to quit is to combine counseling with medication. And there's a lot of ways to do that. There are quit lines available in every state. And I can actually, you know, I would like to give you, if it's okay, the quit line number. There's a national quit number. And super easy, if people can't write it down, it's 1-800-QUIT-NOW. And that'll connect you.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, go for it. I love that you put that out there.
Yeah, 1-800-QUIT-NOW. And then in Texas, there's a specific number, too. Can I give that as well?
Yeah.
Or wait, what state? Yeah. Okay, it's 1-877-937-7848. And the state quit lines, they'll combine coaching usually. A lot of them, like the Texas state quit line, is available 24/7. So they may give you 5 or 6 coaching sessions, but you can call in any time of day, 10 times a day if you want, for support. And then they will also provide some free nicotine patches, gum, or lozenge. Not all the states provide that. It does vary greatly what your state has available. But if you call that 1-800-QUIT-NOW, you can find out what your state provides. So that's one way for people to do it that's completely free. But there's a lot of ways to do it just on your own. I mean, it'd be great, of course, if people could see their physicians, because there are some other wonderful treatments available only by prescription. Chantix is one of the most effective, the single most single agent in helping treating, you know, the withdrawal symptoms and cravings related to smoking cessation. So, but you do need a doctor's prescription for that.
Mm-hmm.
There's also Wellbutrin, which has been shown to help with smoking cessation as well, and that's also a prescription medication. But now, if you can't or don't want to do that in combination with some counseling, people should know that the nicotine replacement therapies that are available over the counter are very safe. I alluded to this before, but I'd like to say a little bit more about it. People know nicotine isn't a health product. You know, they know it's
right.
What makes a cigarette addictive. But what they don't know is it's probably the most benign substance in their cigarette. Nicotine in of itself is it's a little bit of a stimulant. It does have that very mild vasoconstrictive effect on your vessels. But other than that, we don't know of any long-term health consequences from nicotine. You know, people don't think about using caffeine or having coffee. That's a stimulant. It's a drug. It's somewhat addictive also. But people don't worry about that. I just think nicotine is what people associate with harm in cigarettes. And that's unfortunate because there's 60-some-odd, you know, other substances that you get as a result of smoking cigarettes that are known to be harmful to health. And many of them are carcinogenic. Not one of them is nicotine. So I think this dissuades people from using the over-the-counter medications the way they probably should. And what I mean by that is people try to use as little as possible. So if they're smoking a pack of cigarettes, they go and they worry about whether they should get, you know, what patch they should get, and they try to usually get the one that's got the least milligrams. Well, it's pretty well known amongst the community that treats smoking that the biggest failure is related to not having enough nicotine replacement, if you're going to do that. For example, we know that the nicotine patch used with the lozenge together, that is about as effective as Chantix if you use it properly. Yes, if you use them in combination. So you don't have to have a physician. You don't have to have any of those things. You can go to your pharmacist, at any kind of drugstore and ask for some assistance in terms if you're worried about dosing, but it's kind of hard to go wrong. People tend to go the wrong direction and not use enough nicotine replacement because it's so difficult to quit as it is. You do want to help yourself with the withdrawal symptoms, you know, as you're quitting. You want to do what you can to take the edge off on that, and then you can address the other parts of the addiction, you know, because they're complicated and they're interwoven. But getting enough help on the physical side of it is an important thing. And I can't say it enough. They're known to be safe. We've been using them for many, many, many years. They're known to be more effective when used in combination. The patch is a steady flow of nicotine, and the gum and the lozenge are sort of like, we call them episodic, which just means you can use them as you need, you know, throughout the day. And that gives you some modicum of control in your own relief and working through it. So I would like people to know that, you know, that there are effective things you can do if you can't get to a counselor or you can't get to your physician.
Oh, that's great information. Yeah. Do you remember, Mark, we had a guest on our show in March, Ray Cook, who had been addicted to cigarettes for 30 years, and I'm happy to report that he has been tobacco-free for over 3 months, but he said it took him about 4 to 5 times of serious attempts to finally quit for good.
Mm-hmm.
What would you like people to know who have tried to quit but haven't been successful?
Well, I appreciate you asking that because your friend that you had on, he had actually a lower than average number of needed attempts. And I, you know, people might be discouraged by this a little bit, but it can take an average of 6, but actually some estimates are much, much higher than that in terms of actual, you know, intending to quit attempts before people stay quit for good. And, you know, we really, really think of it differently here at MD Anderson when we see our patients and they say, you know, something like, I don't know, I've tried so many times, I keep failing. And then they'll tell us about their successes, that they've actually been able to quit several times and sometimes for lengthy periods of time. They think because they've relapsed, they've not been successful. And that's not the right way to think about it. The truth is, any time you can go without cigarettes, we consider one day, honestly, without smoking at all, a quit. And anytime you can do that, you are building toward your eventual goal of being completely smoke-free. You really learn something every single time, you know, about what went wrong, what you can do differently. And I think when someone really wants to be a non-smoker, that's the important thing. It isn't as important how many times you have to try, because if you just keep trying, you will get it. It does take some people a lot of tries. So it takes some people one. So it really does depend. But, yes, the average is hard to estimate because different people report different statistics. But we're going to say at least 6 to 7 is the average. And it could be quite a bit higher than that in some populations. When they came out with the Surgeon General report, I think, and people realized it was dangerous, a lot of people that had a really easy time quitting quit. And sometimes people who have a harder time quitting, it does take them a few more times. But they absolutely can do it. And it's worth it. It's worth it to keep trying.
Right.
Yeah, we're talking with Diane Benavente with MD Anderson Cancer Center here on Atlanta Life Radio. You kind of hit on some really good stuff, Diane. And thanks for putting those phone numbers out for people, too. When you're having the first casual conversation with a patient, do some of them, when they're kind of peeling back and kind of telling you their story, Do they sometimes just come and say to you, this is just really hard? I mean, and so they have the reasons for why they smoke. They've been smoking since they were a kid, or they're stressed, and that's why they do it. But when it comes to the actual act of quitting, you said it takes maybe on average about 6 times for people to quit. Mm-hmm. Do people just come to you and go, you know what, Diane, this is just, it's just hard. And to my question to you is that, sometimes I'd like to know, like, why is it so hard? I know that it's addictive and all that, but do they come to you and say that? Do they just come out and spill it and go, this is just a hard thing for me to give up?
Oh, yes. I mean, many, many times. And I've had many patients say that they've given up all other kinds of things, alcohol, even, you know, illegal drugs and things of that kind. And they've said, this is so much harder. You know, and we can hypothesize about why that is. I do have my own personal theories that aren't scientifically based, but I think there are reasons why smoking is harder to give up. It's kind of one of the things you can do it all day long, you know, and it's not illegal at all. So, and it also tends to have the consequences can be kind of off far away in the distance, you know. So, interestingly, older people have an easier time quitting than younger people, or they have a better chance of being successful when they try to quit, which is kind of counterintuitive. You might think the longer you've done it, you know, the harder it will be to quit, which there is probably something to that as well. But
I was going to say, I didn't mean to cut you off, but kind of a follow-up to that, and I think you're hitting on a good point, is someone like my dad, who smoked for a long time, he just loved smoking. I mean, he just loved the act of after a meal. I think it was a little different. He wasn't a drinker, but I think it was just like, I remember him telling me, he would say, Mark, I just like it. If I'm out shopping or whatever. And it was kind of this romantic thing that you'd see in movies. You know, people would smoke in restaurants, smoke filled restaurants and airplanes. And I think one of the hardest things for a lot of people that, you know, kind of in his age range at least, and again, I'm not a psychologist or doctor, but he just enjoyed smoking. And so it was like, to hell with the health problems with it. I just like doing it. And so I think that's a pretty tough barrier to overcome. So I'll let you finish up, but I just wanted to interject there because that was kind of his deal.
Yeah, I mean, and it is it's interesting too. Some people say the longer they've smoked, the less they enjoy it. They'll remember back to when they really enjoyed it more. But yeah, so it is an enjoyable thing, and it's hard. People don't necessarily want to give it up. They feel like it's I'd say people kind of tell me they smoke for two main reasons. One is to cope with stress, that it's a really, you know, gives you a momentary feeling of relief. And also to make a good thing better. So after a nice meal, that it's pleasurable to have a cigarette, and that makes that nice experience even better, you know. So it's kind of one of those too. But when I think about why it's so hard to quit, you know, we talked just briefly about the fact that it's kind of woven into your day, usually from very early in the morning till late at night when you're a steady smoker. And, you know, here's an analogy. You know how you can get to work with hardly thinking about where you're going or what you're doing, or your morning routine is so ritualized that you hardly think about it. You may be planning your day while you're getting ready. One behavior is just kind of stemming, you know, making you go to the next without thinking a lot about it. Or driving a car, something you've done a lot, shifting a car. You don't have to think consciously, you just do it. Smoking gets kind of interwoven into your day like that, where one behavior prompts the next. In fact, any behaviors that you repeat often enough will sort of have that, will do that for you. There'll be triggers to do the next behavior and the next behavior. And there's biological changes in your brain when you do that to make it go easier and without as much thinking. So smoking becomes kind of almost unconscious. You're not saying, do I want a cigarette? You're just kind of doing it because get up, have your cigarette, go have your cup of coffee, make your breakfast. Or, you know, people do, they can almost tell you when they smoke. And it's part of their daily routine. So a lot of things can act as triggers to prompt you to smoke. And then you throw on top of that the fact that nicotine is such a powerful drug. So you're reinforcing these patterns with this powerful drug that at once kind of stimulates your brain, yet it feels relaxing and it gives your sense of well-being. It lasts for a very short period, unfortunately, and then people have a sense of withdrawal, which makes them feel poorly. But then the bad thing is that the cigarette is what makes it feel like that goes away. So people have a sense that the cigarette helps me. But the cigarette is really putting them in a state of withdrawal more than they're feeling good. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, I mean, you can see why it would be so hard. And, you know, if you're having a stressful moment at work, you know, you're not going to go run out and have a drink, but you can run out and have a cigarette. You know, people will say that their cigarette is their comforter. It's like a best friend. It's been there for them through everything. And they feel like it's the thing that sometimes helps them cope with even just daily stresses of life. That's hard to give up. And at first it is harder, you know, in those moments when people have been quit for a while, for even a couple of weeks to a month, then they'll start to notice that things kind of even out. You know, you're not feeling that sense of withdrawal so much and your overall sense of well-being and stress level actually goes down. Anxiety mm-hmm. levels go down, depression levels go down. But at first, it's kind of getting through that first phase that is harder. You know, you do miss it. So there has to be some very powerful reason, usually for people, that's helpful when they're trying to quit because you have to get through. And then having some support. And if you don't have a counselor, I know a lot of people don't have a counselor, but having someone who's maybe been through it, who's a friend, who you can talk to, or even just some, they say to let your family know you're doing it, and so they can be supportive. I've heard from a lot of my patients that they don't particularly appreciate the kind of support they get from their family.
Right.
So you have to be a little bit thoughtful, I think, about that, because sometimes people just push people and they don't really understand that it's difficult, how difficult it really is.
And sometimes your dog will cut your cigarettes in half and put them back in your pocket.
So. I know. And, you know, the only people who can get away with that are very young, cute children. you know who's the best is grandchildren. Because they will just crawl up on their grandparents' lap and say something like, they learn in school they're going to die if they smoke, and they'll say something. And they're so innocent and sweet. And I see a lot of motivation coming because of love of family members, children and grandchildren particularly. Yeah.
You know, you said your dad was a smoker, and Mark, you said your dad was a smoker. My mom, who was a hospital administrator, was a smoker, and I can remember back in the 70s, being a little kid and walking to her office, and her and doctors, and, I mean, they would be smoking in her office or at the hospital, and, I mean, even as a kid, I remember thinking, this doesn't, but just it seems like times have changed so much. But are you seeing an increase? My last question for you is, are you seeing an increase in successes, when it comes to people quitting, are you seeing that those times are going down from 6 to 7 to 3 to 4, or is it the supplies like Chantix and the patch and the gum and other things to help people quit tobacco habit for good? Are you seeing an increase in this?
I can't really say. We know overall smoking's going down. And with the Affordable Care Act, there are supposed to be greater accessibility, and you know, the different medications that are available are covered, I believe, under more healthcare plans, which should make, you know, I think the more choices you have, that makes it easier for your doctor and you to make a plan that's right for you. So
right.
I assume that will have an impact. As far as the number of times, you know, I don't know about that. There's different theories on that. You know, some people believe that, you know, when the Surgeon General report came out, I think that was like 1964, the people who were very casual smokers or didn't smoke much or could quit easily for whatever reason kind of did. And then people who had a harder time, you know, didn't. And it really does vary a lot, and you can never say. I mean, so many people know someone who just quit, you know, cold turkey, put them down. That's kind of unusual, actually, though. But I don't know why we all know someone like that. But that's not the usual story, and you can never know what someone else is grappling with in terms of why it's as hard as it is for them. But there are reasons, you know. Everyone's different biologically, their histories, their environment, everything. Stress, the way that other coping things they have available to them, other coping skills. So I don't know about the number of times. That could be, I suspect that when it was a more common thing, actually, the average number of times for people to try to quit was probably lower than it is today, because there were more people, yeah, a huge percentage of the population smoked. I mean, we just didn't know it was bad for you. Yeah, I've seen videos also of people in hospitals, you know, and they're all smoking with patients around, you know, and that seems so unreal to us today because we're so much more aware of all the different ways that it affects your body negatively. So I suspect in actuality the number of tries may, I don't know this for certain, I don't have a statistic that I can reference, but it may be going up just because the people who could quit more easily may have done so already. Yeah.
Well, Diane, great information. Appreciate the time. That time just flew by. Good, good stuff. We were talking with Diane Beneventi from MD Anderson Cancer Center, psychologist working with the tobacco treatment program. Diane, thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
That was good stuff. Keep up the fight, and hopefully you'll get back. Hey, when you get to San Diego, we'll get together and have a cup of coffee without a cigarette. How's that?
That would be great. I hope to get there soon. Thank you both so much.
Okay, thanks, Diane.
Okay,
and we'll
bye-bye.
Be right back.
All bye-bye. Right, bye-bye.
This is executive producer Mel D, and on behalf of the Atlanta Life Radio team, we thank all of our faithful listeners. If this is your first time tuning in, we thank you. Share us with your friends, like us on Facebook, and please come back. A special thank you to all of our financial sponsors, because without their financial support, this show would not be made possible. If you are interested in becoming a financial sponsor, or want to learn how to advertise with us, please send an email complete with your contact information to info@AtlantaLifeRadio.com. Again, please send us an email complete with your contact information to info@AtlantaLifeRadio.com. And now we return back to our program.
And we are back. If you're just checking in with us, remember to go on Twitter and like us at ALR Radio or follow me at Going Gym Free. And you're listening to AtlantaLifeRadio.com. And always you can download our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. So go ahead and do that and keep listening to the show and keep liking us on Facebook and doing all those kinds of things. Beth, if you were on Twitter, I would say you should check out my Going Gym Free, my Twitter account. I got a lot of good stuff on there. And I know you're going to check it occasionally. It's good stuff. So I mention you. I kind of have kind of for both of us. So.
Well, thanks for doing that.
Just FYI.
Well, thank you. Okay,
you're
welcome. I do have to say, Diane, what a great, sweet, energizing, what a great interview. I'm so glad we had her on. She was amazing.
She was great, well-spoken, and, you know, it's a topic. It's kind of interesting because, you know, one of the questions that I asked is that I don't see smoking as much out here in California. I really don't. And, I lived in Texas. I lived in Arizona. I spent a lot of time in Louisiana South, and I know it's more. I mean, you probably have more friends or people you know that smoke than I do. It's just an interesting thing, and you would think that more people now, might know about the dangers of it, but still a big problem, still a huge problem.
Well, I work in the oil, the energy world, obviously there's a lot of coworkers that I deal with. I mean, addictions and whatnot, and tobacco is definitely one of those that I actually find more people chew. The smoke, and you know why that is because they actually can chew on a rig, whereas they can't light up a cigarette like on a land rig or offshore or whatever, but they can dip. So
I'm going to put you on the spot because this isn't a great story, but and I'm sure as a woman you haven't. Have you ever tried chewing tobacco?
I did. Okay. I can't believe I'm going to say this. I did. I tried it, and literally, it was just all in my mouth and all over my face, and it was like, blah, 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 blah. And I felt sick to my stomach. So
yep.
I did try dip one time when I was in college, and I should have said no, but yes, I did. I did. And
I'm the same way. More of my friends out here, especially playing baseball, would dip when I was growing up or when I was in high school and all that. And I tried it a few times, and I was like, it made me so sick. I mean, I think if people have never tried that and you put that in, it will make you nauseous. And about 10 years ago was the last time I tried it. And I took a dip, and I was playing in a men's night softball game, and I was standing in the outfield, and my head was spinning. It was spinning.
Really?
It was like a feeling of being intoxicated, and I got sick, and I threw up, and I said, I just can't. It was never a habit with me, but if that's one thing where if you've never tried it, don't even bother getting started, because it's such an awful, miserable feeling from personal experience. So you shouldn't do it anymore. So that's my soapbox about chewing tobacco. Now, I also found what was really interesting with Diane is that the six times takes the average person around six tries before they quit. That's amazing, because you deal a lot with, addiction, and it's a hard thing. And I mentioned the story of my dad who did quit smoking, but I think he would sneak cigarettes. He just loved smoking. He loved the act of smoking. Like I said, I mean, it goes back to, after a good meal and being outside and socializing. It was just kind of the thing to do, but very difficult to quit, obviously. And you know what it's like dealing with clients that are facing addiction.
Yeah. You know, and a lot of my, the clients that I work with, my coworkers that I work with, and it's not just tobacco, it's, you know, unhealthy eating, it's not wanting to work out, it's being addicted to sugar, emotional eating, or whatever the case may be. But, you know, I tell my coworkers there's a big difference between wanting to be healthy and then committing to that goal. So, I mean, everybody wants to be healthy. Everybody. I mean, I've never met someone in my entire life that says, I want to be healthy. But committing to that lifestyle is different. So it takes a real, you know, strong person, a great personality like Diane to actually can dig in and have this variety of techniques and motivational interviewing and whatever works for somebody. So I'm, And what works for one is not going to work for the next. So.
Right. And you know, the other thing that strikes me about smoking nowadays, and we touched on it a little bit, is the cost of it. So a pack of cigarettes is, what, $6 now out here? I don't know, $6.50, $5.50. The price has gone up. So, you know, hopefully that serves as some kind of deterrent. But, you know, in my family, I saw smoking, and you know, I'm glad I never caught the bug to smoke. Ended up being a good thing. And you know, the other thing, we kind of ran out of time in that interview, but the other thing that I think is interesting is that you wish you could go up to the 18, 19, 20 year old that you see smoking, and because, you know, at that age, everybody feels like they're going to live forever, but you'd love to show them the 50-year-old person that's now struggling with emphysema and the quality of life. And, you know, she touched on this about quality of life, which I'm such a big believer in. But, you know, I saw it with my dad, where, you know, his quality of life went down just because of the smoking.
Right.
And that, to me, is where you'd like to take the younger people. Now, I sound like a total old man. To take those young people, you know, and get out of my yard now. But you'd like to take the young people and go and take them into a facility where people are having breathing problems, lung issues, lung cancer, emphysema, you know, COPD, all of those things, and go, if they just didn't smoke. If they just didn't smoke. So.
Yeah. You know, I think it's interesting. One of my favorite TV shows, and this is a complete, it's not off topic, but it's a little, one of my favorite shows of all time is I Love Lucy. And we all know that I Love Lucy, it's so wholesome and it's so sweet, but she smoked in that TV show. And I, as an adult, and I look at that show, and I'm thinking, I wonder why they had, because it was so prominent back, like, in the 40s and 50s, and it was okay. And I was sitting in a seminar not too long ago. It's called The Food Revolution. It was talking about sugar, but how doctors back in the 50s said, okay, smoking's not healthy for you, but as long as it's moderation, it's not bad for you. I'll never forget that statement sitting in that seminar. So I think back in the 50s, when, you know, you would see someone like Lucille Ball and, you know, actors in Hollywood smoking, and it was very glamorous and it was okay. And again, moderation. So I think what a telltale sign of where that's gone from, you know, 50, 60 years ago.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, because I know you talk about it a lot, about addiction, we've talked about it on the show, and I think, you know, I think this is still on topic. Do you find that you have some clients that, you know, if, let's just take sugar for example, because I know you're big into, you know, kind of not having any sugar. Do you have people that kind of come back that struggle with the addiction part of things, like not necessarily tobacco even, but just addiction in general? Do you find that you're having people that they keep kind of slipping back, relapsing, or look, we know you're the most wonderful wellness person in the world, but we know you can cure everybody. But do you find that, you know, when she talked about the six times, do you find that can be true with other types of addictions too, or maybe some are a little easier, or is addiction? What do you think? I mean, with something like that?
I think addiction is addiction. And I think if somebody can, you know, talking with Diane, she said some people can quit alcohol, but they can't quit tobacco. Some people can quit illegal drug use, but they can't quit tobacco. I mean, it's the same with sugar. Some people could probably quit tobacco, but not sugar, and vice versa. And so, I mean, in a nutshell, the goal is to promote a positive behavior change in the participant that I'm helping, or the coworker that I'm helping. And absolutely. I mean, I can, when you said that, you asked me that question, I had a coworker in mind. I can't say his name, but he wants to give up sugar. But what he does now is he waits till he gets to work and he hides it from his wife. So if you're listening, you know what I'm talking about, but that's what he's saying. He's just like, it's such an addictive, and he's like, likes it so much. And it's one of those things, and it is hard. I mean, I was addicted to sugar and I gave it up about what, 4 months ago. So, yeah, and it's the same thing, addicted to TV instead of working out and being active. I mean, it can it's just a downward spiral, I think. And, I mean, some addictions are worse than others, obviously. But I think, you know, when someone has an addictive personality, that's going to, you know, the first thing you do is establish a rapport and let the participant know that what I'm going to do and what we're tuned in and what's going on in their life and understanding the situation and the hazards of it. And honestly, some people don't care. I mean, I'm sure your dad knew that smoking wasn't the healthiest thing, and he chose to smoke. And some people are like, right. I know I'm overweight. I know that it causes diabetes. I know that it's not, you know, whatever, whatever. But they don't care because it tastes so good, and they get the instant gratification. So, it, you know, it comes down to a will and a want, and then the way.
You know, it's funny because the other interesting thing that's a little, I think, even scarier with the whole smoking thing is it, you know, it's really tough because I promote, and I know you do as well. You know, I promote walking and simple things, you know, taking a 15-20 minute walk and, a lot of, you know, the 10,000 steps I'm always talking about. But the interesting thing is that, and I noticed this with my dad when it came to tobacco, is that once the lungs go, kind of the desire to, you can't, you, someone that has severe lung problems, they physically can't go, they can't go do those kinds of things that we think are, I mean, forget about going to gym or anything like that. But even, I remember telling him, look, when just, you know, take my dog and go down to the end of the block and turn around. And it was just, I mean, his breathing was such a problem that now you're even farther down the mountain. And so that's one of the things I think I would tell people that are younger. And then, you know, once you start losing that lung capacity, it can be almost impossible to overcome. So that's kind of what scares me about people that smoke a lot. And then they go, you know what, I think I want to feel better, and they quit. But sometimes it's, you know, I hate to say it, sometimes it's too late. So I'm glad people are out there like you and all the other good people that are trying to tell people to stop smoking. So
you're absolutely right. It takes a really long time for those lungs to heal themselves. So, and they can, but it takes a very, very long time. You're absolutely right. So,
yeah. So we're not doing the Ask Beth segment this week, because we took a lot of time with the interview and with Diane. And did you have anything like this putting you on the spot? If you had a this or that, cool. If not, we'll just we'll keep rambling on about something else. We can talk about whatever you want.
Whatever you want. No, for our listeners that are just tuning in, one of the things that Mark puts me on the spot sometimes and makes me kind of stumble. So I like to do the same with him. So I have a little segment every once in a while that pops up called This or That. So I'm going to ask you two things and you have to choose which one you would prefer, you know, to do or you like better. So would you rather live in Alaska or Louisiana?
Alaska. I've lived in Louisiana. I haven't been to Alaska, although I am intrigued by the summers where it stays light for like 19 hours a day or 20 hours a day. So I would take Alaska, but I don't want to slight the people of Louisiana. I've just already been out there for, that's a good question though.
Okay. Scary movies or romantic movies?
Well, I Can I have a couple answers?
So, yeah.
Scary movies from the 80s. Definitely. There's really not any good scary movies now. Probably scary movies, but back when I was younger. Now, is it a romantic comedy or is it just like a bad romantic chick flick type thing? Can there be some comedy in there or is it just...
No, it's like the Notebook. Scary movie or romantic. I have never seen The Notebook. I've heard so many good things about it, but I haven't seen it.
What a great reference to throw on me. You know, it's got to be like The Notebook. I'm taking a scary movie over The Notebook. Yes, I knew you were going to kind of go with like a Notebook or Driving Miss Daisy.
That's not a romantic movie.
Oh my gosh.
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, this one's. We've thrown the script away for this show. This one's kind of going off the rails. I thought that was kind of romantic, right? Doesn't Morgan Freeman drive her around? But doesn't she? I can't remember that movie, so I guess my reference is terrible. But.
All right. Oh my gosh. Moving on.
Okay.
Moving on. Italian food or Mexican food?
Oh, easy Italian. Easy. And I live in Southern California, which is some of the greatest Mexican food you'd find, Italian food. In fact, you know, I know how to cook some Italian food. I learned how to cook a lot of Italian food when I lived in the South because I used to hang out with a restaurant owner out there who was from Kosovo, follow me, but he trained in Italian cooking when he moved to Europe, and he taught me some recipes. And plus, I've always loved Italian food, although now I don't eat as much because of the carbs, too much
uh-huh.
carbs.
Right.
But I'll substitute like wheat. I'll have like wheat pasta sometimes. I haven't had pasta in a while, though. But, Italian for sure. Yeah.
Well, you're going to come out and see me in August. Excuse me.
Yep.
So will you make me some Italian food?
Yeah. Let's do it. Or I'll buy you a pizza.
You're like, let's get that right. Okay, two.
What do you know? You know. What do you know? You're from Indiana. What do you know about Italian food? I mean, you don't.
Olive Garden. Olive Garden.
Right. Breadsticks at Olive Garden. That's actually
uh-huh.
Olive Garden's probably big. Where you was that like the big restaurant where you grew up? Olive Garden.
Oh yeah. It was like
wow.
Big. Yeah, I grew up in Indiana, so. Gosh, I can't even think of, like, Italian Chef Boyardee. I mean, honestly, I can't even think. I'm sure there are, but we didn't go out to eat a lot. It was mostly home-cooked foods and whatnot.
Did you say Chef Boyardee?
I did. I did. I was trying to think of something Italian, and that just popped out. So Olive Garden and Chef Boyardee, yeah.
I think we can forget about the Olive Garden and Chef Boyardee sponsorships for the radio show at this point now. Those are probably out the window, but that's funny. Yeah, Olive Garden. I live by an Olive Garden, and I've seen Chef Boyardee in the supermarket. So you're still
yeah.
present. You're still stuff.
Still
which
present
is,
in the real world. Okay.
Yeah,
okay, going back to my this or that, ask Mark. Would you rather participate in water ballet or rhythmic gymnastics?
Oh, my God. What is it? Water ballet or sweet
rhythmic
Maria?
Gymnastics.
What is it? Water ballet or gym? What's rhythmic gymnastics? Is that like a floor routine or the pummel horse? What is that?
No. Oh my gosh. Oh, I should have like prepped you for this. No, it's kind of like
fun.
More like dancing and ballet with like on the floor, like with ribbons and balls and. It's called rhythmic gymnastics. It's yeah.
I grew up, I learned to swim when I was very, very young, being in California. So I'm going to go with the water ballet. That would be funny. That would go on the website if I ever did perform water ballet. I think rhythmic gymnastics I'd have no shot at being able to be good at that. But, so I'll go with water ballet.
Okay. Now my last one, do you prefer the Summer Olympics getting ready or do you prefer watching the Winter Olympics?
Well, I like to watch the skiers crash in the Winter Olympics.
Oh, that's horrible.
No,
I'm just kidding.
I'm just kidding. I like jeez. God, you stumped me. I like the Winter Olympics. I do. I like the skiing. I don't ski, but I like the skiing. And I like it. I like both certain things. I like the swimming, though, too, in the summer. But if you were pressing me, if I wasn't sitting on the fence like that, I'd probably say the winter. Even though I'm more of a summer season guy, I like the Winter Olympics, yeah.
Okay.
And I don't hope for the skiers to crash. But sometimes that's what makes the headlines when someone goes down there. Those are good questions, though. I like that. That was
you
a good
like
this
it?
Or that. Mm-hmm.
I know. I had to come up with those snappity snap because we didn't have any ask that. We didn't have an ask us segment, which we'll be back next week, I'm sure. But
Well, I'm being told we are out of time. So this flew by. Great guest. Everything was good. You and I had a good, colorful chat there in the second half hour. I loved it. So I hope you have a good week in Louisiana. And
well, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it. And
stay in touch.
Oh, come on. We talk every day. Come on.
Yeah.
Act like we're just like coworkers.
Right. All right. So everybody, thanks for listening. And we'll be back here with a new episode next week. Have a great week, everybody.